Hey, everybody, welcome back. It is another episode of Dadcast. I, of course, am JP, joined with Nick down there. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. Wow. Jesse, our other co-host, is out on this episode. Apparently, he's in a bus going somewhere football related. So, Jesse, we miss you, buddy. We'll catch you on the next one. Joining us today on the podcast, in a little swerve from what you are usually expecting, we have an amazing female guest. She is Dr. Daria, Harvard educated. She's all over TV. We're going to get into a whole bunch of what she does, because she ran down a list, a whole big list. And it's very interesting. And I'm going to lie, I'm a little bit jealous of the career that she has brought in. Dr. Daria, how are you? Thank you for joining Dadcast.
Thank you so much, JP. It's an honor.
Hold that reservation for the late. We'll see how you feel about an hour from now.
Yeah, wait for 5 minutes so we jump off the rails.
That to the side.
Like Nick said, I do want to point out that, you know, we do typically on this podcast like to talk about dads and everything dad centric, you know, the before, the during, the after, and everything in between. But we do tend to sometimes go off the rails, and by sometimes, every single time. So just so you know, but in this case, I'm not going to ask the typical question that I always start with. I'm going to change it up. And that is, are you a mom?
I am. Yes. I have three amazing kiddos, 10, 7, and 14 months.
And 7 and 14 months. So you're in the thick of it, just like Nick.
Yes. Right. And just as after I get out of the thick of it, I'll be in the thick of it for tweens. So there's just never...
Oh, man. 10, 7, 14 months. Well, our buddy Nick down there, he has, last count, 87 children. And his youngest is just past that year mark a little bit ago.
Yeah, 18 months. And she is crazy. I'm so glad you're actually on here so I can figure out, what do we do when she's like taking head dives onto the hardwood floor off the couch?
Uh-huh. Yeah, sounds about right. It's
all of Nick's kids have that in common.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. Liam is like a little more reserved.
So we took the kids to the park and they have this super high slide and Liam's like, I'm going to do it. He gets to the top and freaks out. However, Sophie though gets to the slide. She stands up. She's like, I'm just going to walk down. I'm like, no.
You're like, I want you to be fearless. Just can we be a little less fearless? Like,
yeah, our ER visits take like 24 hours, literally. So I really don't have 24 hours to sit in the hospital. So let's not.
So, Dr. Daria, take us through a typical day in the life of you as far as work and career goes.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, an ER doctor, there is never a typical day.
I've seen all the shows.
Well, that makes you effectively an ER doctor, JP, if you've watched the shows.
That's right.
It is, but that's part of the joy and part of the challenge of it, just like, kind of like parenting. It's not as if there's a typical day. You know, the day starts, I have my 30 to 40 minutes of usually before a child wakes up. You never know. During that time, I try to get some running in, read my Bible, have my coffee, and then the kids wake up and then your day is no longer your own. You had that time. Kids, school, and then you'll either find me after we take them to school, either I'm headed into the ER to work a shift or I'm headed into the studio to film a TV news segment or into my office to work on baby and child safety stuff, my upcoming course and things like that. So it's never the same.
Wow. Very, sounds like a fun life. I'm not even kidding. Busy, busy life. I myself
on the website right now looking at the non-panic parenting website.
So, yeah, no panic
there's
parenting.
There's a lot of good advice in here. I like this.
I don't typically panic when it comes to parenting, but here, as I mentioned in just a few minutes ago, I want to get your advice on what you would do in this situation. Okay.
Okay.
So, and I hope he can hear me. I have a 14-year-old son, and you may be asking yourself, JP, it's the middle of the day on a Monday, and it's not a holiday. Why is your 14-year-old son not at school? We have been fighting him having issues waking up since 8th grade, and it is now coming into the beginning of 9th grade, and we bed on time, electronic shut off. You know, we've done all those things. It's still every single morning. And I'm not even kidding when I say every single morning. I am not. This is a fact. Every single school morning, there's a fight. In this particular case, this morning, mom was at grandma's house, so it was my responsibility to get him up and out and do the thing. So I'm up at 6:30. I do take care of myself at 7 o'clock. I give first warning. Okay. He doesn't have to be out the door until 7:55. That's a whole hour. It's the time to get up, bud. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. All right. Of course, I knew that wasn't going to work. 10 minutes later, go back in. Hey, it's time to get up. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. At 7:30, I say, you know what? I'm going to give the kid a break today. Hey, bud, instead of catching the bus, I'm going to take you to school. You just earned yourself an extra hour of wake up time. All right, let's go. Right. You know, be the good dad.
That's amazing.
Right. So now it's at 8:15. You can get up, get a shower, and we're out the door at 8:45. You'll be at school on time. Everything is good. No. Nope, nope, nope. Didn't get up, won't get it. And we get the, I don't feel good now. 3 hours after the fact, mom came home. She tried, won't do it. And now he's still in there. And he's literally been texting me. That's why I came on late. So, Nick, it was dealing with kiddo in there still. But it's a fight. And once he gets awake and up and get his day started, then everything is fine. It's like if school started at 10:30 or 11 a.m., he'd be a straight A student and be on time and perfect attendance, but we don't know what to do. Almost at wit's end. We've talked to school, his coaches, his teachers, other parents. I don't know what to do to get him up.
Oh man. Go ahead. But I was just saying, just for one, that is part of the challenge with teenagers. Their circadian rhythm is actually delayed. It is later than ours. And that is why they are shifted to go to sleep later and wake up later, which is why we are seeing some schools trying to take initiatives to actually start school later. It sounds like, I mean, you're doing so much of it. I would say that kind of what you did this morning is he kind of got an hour and 15 minutes of snooze, which is actually pretty detrimental for sleep. Now, you were trying to do it to get him up and kind of making decisions on the fly. But I would say on those days, you're going to actually not have to wake him up till 8:15. Just don't go into 8:15. Like, make that decision the night before. Maybe have him be a part of that decision. Yeah. Like, maybe there's one day a week that you just say, I'm going to take you. So it is a routine. Because again, the more we can get our routines in place and not be doing that, because he could have had an extra hour and 15 minutes of sleep, but instead he had really interrupted sleep and that wasn't quality. So I would just say that one thing. Otherwise, yes, it's the devices. No devices in their room, period. No devices charging at night in the room, but it sounds like you're already doing that. No devices 90 minutes before you want him to go to bed, because the melatonin is suppressed by that blue light for 90 minutes. So if he needs to go to bed at 10 p.m., he needs to be off the device by, I would say, 8 p.m. But are you already doing all those things, JP? Like even
most
that delay
of the time,
on the device?
The we've gotten everything out of the room that has an internet connection. I have an awesome router now that I can just literally go on my phone, pop off, 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 off down the list, right? Uh-huh. But it's getting that phone out of his room. You know, he thinks he's smarter than us. He thinks that none of us have ever lived a life before him.
No, of course, he's a teenager. You don't know anything.
Of course. And the excuse I can't not have my phone in there, Dad, because that's my alarm clock. Well, and I'm like, here's your brand new alarm clock. Mm-hmm. You know, whoa, I just hit the laugh button. Yeah. How perfect timing that was.
Definitely phone out of the room. 100%. It is out. Especially if he's giving you a hard time in the morning, a phone's not a right. It's not there's nowhere in the Constitution does it say you're endowed with a phone.
Nope.
It is a benefit. And if you can't get out of bed in the morning, then the phone shuts off at 8 p.m. No phone, period. It's not in the room. It's not him. It's science. There's the end of story. There was something else. I think if he has to use a device late at night, have him use the blue blockers. And then there comes a point that no matter, I mean, JP, you could be a PhD in neurosleep.
Was absent today in periods 1
and 3. Oh, there we go. Yeah, there you go.
As if on time. Sawyer was absent. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm listening.
No, you could be a PhD in neurosleep psychology, and he would still be telling you don't know what you're doing. And at a certain point, you just bring in experts. There's great experts in this. You know, Michael Bruce is one that I know personally. And you consult with them for an hour, do a little telemedicine consult, and they'll tell you everything that you already know. And pretty much probably, I mean, they might tell you some melatonin. There's some other things he might be able to help you do to kind of reset your son's sleep. a lot of it you might already know. You might get some extra tips, but and also it's just somebody else who's an expert telling your son, and maybe he'll listen to that too and help you all create some ground rules.
Yeah. Oh man, today was Monday. I'll tell you what.
You don't want to live like this. He doesn't want to live like this. You need to get some routines and put that in place.
You know, we're trying, but okay. So thank you. All right.
You're welcome.
So Keep me posted. I want an update. Huh?
Okay, now that's not fair. I can talk to you about all sorts of things, but if you want to see Raiders, I told you I was going to need my 7-year-old son who could come in. He probably could tell you who the quarterback is. I don't know.
Honestly, when they won, I was so bummed. I'm like, oh man, this is all we're going to talk about today.
Well,
I was like, lose.
And don't think I wasn't. I had no intentions of, I was going to drop a snippet in there here and there, because it's so few and far between when such a good thing like this happens.
It's like seeing a unicorn.
It's crazy, man. But all right. So anywho, man. So I want to ask you, you said 18 months, your youngest?
14 months.
Okay. You do understand, Nick, you just said it. You've got maybe a week or two left. You have 4 months and some days to where you can no longer say 18 months. You're going to say your kid's a year and a half old. Okay.
That's right.
You're not allowed to do it past 18 months.
Oh, my baby.
I'm saying she's two now. I'm like, she's two.
Dr. Daria, we've had this conversation with so many parents over the years, and we've come to the conclusion. There's been studies, there's been tests, there's been all the things. Okay.
Out of Stanford yes. studies.
Yes. And in Harvard, most importantly, you could probably look it up somewhere. At 18 months, you are no longer, that's the last time you're allowed to say months. And I know, I'm sorry, it's unfortunate, but we can't have people out there saying my daughter's 48 months old. Okay.
I know.
That just doesn't work.
It's too much math.
My 240 month old daughter.
Yeah. Your 12 year old? What? Come on.
What's happening here?
What has been the most challenging aspect of you as a parent in your case with your children?
Oh my! Out of all the challenges, you want me to choose one, JP? And you
yes, me on the but you can make a broad spectrum of them if you'd like. But
I would say sleep for just looking at my needs as a parent. I think that's one thing. The amount of sleep that you lose when they're born, and then the realization that you're never getting that back. I have friends who have teenagers, and they're staying up till midnight until their teenager gets home. So that has been a challenge. I remember just a note when I was in residency, I had been up for 36 hours, and something minor happened. It was something with my coffee. And I started crying, bawling, sobbing. And my professor came to me and said, Daria, why are you crying? And I was like, I don't know. And she said, how long have you been awake? And I told her, 36, 38 hours. And she said, well, that's why. She said, because sleep deprivation is a torture tech. They use it in the CIA to break people. There's nothing wrong with you. You're exhausted. And I was like, oh, okay. So I'm not crazy. I just need a nap. And then I was also like, and I could never give, join the CIA, cause I would have given a nuclear secrets away just to have a nap. But it was full, because when my babies, each of them were four, especially my first one was 4 weeks old, and I was trying to super mom it and be there every second of every moment. And I was just getting to that same crazy person stage. And I suddenly was like, oh yeah. It's because I'm tired. It's not because I'm a bad mom. It's not because there's anything wrong with my baby. Babies sleep erratically, and I am sleep deprived. So I think I knew to expect the crazy, but it's still really hard when you're really tired to be your best parent.
Understandable. Nick hasn't slept since COVID.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like my 4-year-old, like he was doing great. And then now he's on this, like 9 o'clock hits and it's like game on. And come on, buddy.
Yep. That's that four-year-old milestone.
My daughter's doing the same thing too. It's like, you know, she was good. And then all of a sudden it's like, we're going backwards.
And then you're like, oh great. Now we're working on sleep again. We thought we figured it out. Now working on sleep. And then you'll get it. And then you'll be like, oh yeah, we're good. I'm so good. And then another year or two and something else will happen.
Yeah. You know, every
and then
year.
They become teenagers. Yeah.
And then they become teenagers. And then we have JP's problem. And so sleep. But this is the theme of this segment of failure.
Actually, so tell us a little bit. I want to jump back into the no panic parenting. Tell us a little bit about that.
Tell us a lot of bit about that.
Got it. So when my third was born last summer, this was now my third child. So that, and I was, you know, as you notice, he's 9 years younger than my other children. So I was an older mom, or some could call me more of a veteran mom, which is the nicer way of saying it. I also was like, it's probably going to be, I wanted to enjoy this time. I also had been practicing medicine for 10 more years. So I'd taken care of all those kids during that time. And I had to re-baby proof my house because we had un-baby proofed it. And I started to look at, and I thought, anything I see for baby proof and guidance, this is not what I'm telling parents in the ER. This is not what I think parents need to know. And there's so many times in the ER, I'm taking care of a child, and I'm thinking, man, like if I could have just talked to these parents 2 hours ago, we could have prevented this. We could have done that. So all of those things together made me realize that this isn't out there and I want to create it. And the whole point of how it became no panic parenting was I said, okay, I want to create this way of getting information to my patients, you know, 2 days before they need to come to that ER visit. Let's intervene with them there. So it's essentially three things. It's super evidence-based. I went to the outcomes that we want to avoid. I said, instead of just like, let's making a random checklist, what are the injuries? What are the bad things that parents want to avoid? Let me look at that data and then let's reverse engineer to come up with a process that prevents exactly those things. So it's super evidence-based, and I've had top experts in pediatric injury are on my team reviewing the content too. So it's super science, super evidence-based. It's super actionable because I am an ER doctor and we're all super ADHD type tendencies and we need it to be snappy. So you watch the videos, you get your to-do, you got your shopping list, you can proceed. And then it's no panic. The point is I'm giving this information, which can be scary. It's parents' worst fears, but we're doing it not to scare you, not to tell you all the new things to worry about, no new fears unlocked, but to say, this exists. Let's help you get it better so you can have that peace of mind.
Thought she invented a time machine.
Oh, that would be next. That's next. This is our MVP.
I could just talk to you 2 hours ago.
So, yes, no panic parenting 2.0. will be a time machine, my friends.
There it is. You heard it first. Big Bang Theory's got nothing on Dr. Daria.
You can invest in it here.
Oh, man. So duly noted, no sports. I cannot talk about sports. Okay.
Well, we can talk about sports. It's just, I mean, I'm in Atlanta. I grew up in Tennessee. We want to talk SEC. We can go there.
Okay. USC beat LSU last week.
No. a little rude. You had to throw that in there. Thanks.
LSU's not your team though, right?
No. Okay. I know good LSU people, but no. I am a Vols fan. Go Vols.
Tennessee, man. You know. Well, I don't know if you follow it, but they defined whooped whoever they played this past weekend. It was like it was embarrassing. It was to the point my kid who loves football, the one we were previously talking about, came out, Dad, did you see that? It was like 110-0 or something.
It was it's like bad math. Yeah. It's one of those where you're like, wait, did they have a problem with the scoreboard? Like, can you get that? Was this basketball? What happened here? So, yes.
I'm sorry. I do that. I'm quick like that with the quick of scenario changes. What is a... And I love this because I don't get the opportunity, especially with so educated and a doctor. I don't get the opportunity to ask these questions to women on this platform too often. So this is a good one. I usually save it for the end. But what is one piece of advice that you would give a new father if you were put in a situation to where, you know, that you think from your experience, especially I'm sure your husband and the things you've gone through, best piece of advice you got for a brand new dad or soon to be dad?
Ooh, okay. I would say new dads, you're going to develop. You're going to see that baby and think, oh my goodness, I'm going to break this baby. Mm-hmm. Every parent has that moment. And then you're over time going to develop a dad gut. and it's not about other people's babies. It is going to be specific to your baby. So you're going to hear a lot of conflicting advice. It's a lot, some good, a lot of it's bad. And, you know, I would say find your trusted people, find your trusted sources, and then, you know, trust your dad gut. You know your baby better than anyone. And that's really important. So when you hear somebody saying, well, you got to sleep train this way, you got to do this or that, if it feels wrong for your baby, that's okay. I mean, within reason, talk to your pediatrician, make sure you're still following those things. But if somebody gives you some sleep training advice, you don't want to follow because it feels wrong for your baby to do that, that's okay. I always say that parent gut is the sixth vital sign. Like if I have a child come in, I'm like, listen, your baby looks fine. Their temperature, their heart rate, everything looks fine. But the parent's like, I know my child and this here that is happening is different. I'm going to take that seriously. I'm going to say, okay, let's do some other tests. Is there something else we should look at? So I would say you're going to build it. You don't start off knowing it. That's okay. Just listen to your baby and spend that time together and you'll build that dad gut.
All right, there you go. I took all that advice for the record. And the great part about the horror story from earlier is I have an 11-year-old daughter who is perfect. She gets me up in the morning to tell me, Dad, you need to wake me up to go to school.
Oh, how precious.
But you're already awake, sweetheart.
You know, that's each children. It's like, how do you have the same genetic makeup and you're so different?
Yeah.
So,
but we'll see what happens. She's got, like Nick just said, she's 11. She just entered junior high. I'm starting to hear the whispers of, oh, that boy's cute with her friends. Oh, and, heavens, yeah. And God help me. So we'll see how that works out in the next couple of years, mm-hmm. but so far so good. And Sawyer and Avery, if you're watching this episode back in the very near future, I love you both. Sawyer, just because I'm mad at you for not waking up on time, that doesn't mean I love you any less. If you're watching this 20 years from now, how did it all work out, man? Let me know. And there he is.
I hope you have kids and they do the same thing you're doing to your dad.
Yes. And if any of my grandchildren are old enough to be understanding what's happening right now on this episode, you give it to that dad of yours. You give it to him. Okay.
You know what? An old family friend once told my father, I'm sure it's when my brothers were giving my dad a hard time, because obviously I never gave my parents a hard time. Obviously, hopefully my parents are not watching this, but he said, grandparents are your, and grandchildren are your reward for not killing your own children when they were teenagers.
Ah, okay.
So just wait. It's, you know, and so my parents remind me of that sometimes when my own children are being difficult.
Gotcha. I'm sorry. The teenage in question has interrupted the podcast. So I need to ask him what's up. What's up, dude? You need what? You need the mail key in the middle of a podcast. Okay.
There's some important mail coming. Well,
you want to meet Dr. Daria? She's got lots of good advice. You sure? Yeah, I wouldn't if I was you either, man.
He's like, not here, Dad.
It's funny. So when you were explaining this, and I hate being distracted, if we leave now, will I be grounded? So guess who's still going to make it to school on time and make football practice, even if it's half a day? I call that a win, right?
Oh, man.
You know what? You've got to take those wins where you can get them.
Oh, man. And I wonder what's in the mail that's so important.
You might want to go get the mail.
He's trying to do a chore to butter you up. And he's going to be like, Dad, let's stop at Chick-fil-A on the way to school.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Teenagers.
We haven't done a Fast Five in a long time, Nick.
Did not create one.
But we know the questions off the top of our head. So let me give you a little background here, Dr. Daria. If you weren't aware, I have a background in radio, in media. That's where the lovely voices come from. And because of the face is why I worked in radio. and during those many years, we put together a segment we called Fast Five. We'd ask our guests questions, boom, boom, real quick, bam, 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 questions. And I gave that chore to Nick when we started this podcast and we brought it back to life on the podcast. Turns out Nick didn't have the questions, but there's so many of them that they're memorized. So we're just going to go off memory here. This is a fun little game. Don't need to overthink it. Nick, go.
All right. If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be and why?
Well, obviously, it would say Buy No Panic Parenting, the best baby proof and baby safety course. Thank you, Nick. That's
awesome. I'm going to superimpose the link right there after.
Yeah, okay? There you go.
Thanks for that prompt.
Favorite vacation spot for you and your family?
Beach?
I just have one word answer. Did you want me to say beach? Beach.
Okay. What mm-hmm. beach?
All right. Favorite breath?
Oh, no.
Oh, sorry.
He's answering what beach?
JP, we're on to the next. Hilton Head. It's easy. It's easy to get to. We bicycle around, go to the beach, go to the pool. It's easy, which is with my kids my age. I want easy and simple.
All right.
Yeah. I took my kids to Vegas once. That was stupid.
Yeah, that's a bad idea. You needed to take them to know that, Nick. I mean, you could have called me.
His kid, his son at the time, was like a display piece. You know, everyone just swarmed. And oh, yeah, that was a bad idea, dude.
Yeah. Just getting off the airplane to the hotel. That was the hardest part. Just from onboarding the airplane to the rental car to get to the hotel. Because it's like, it's not like a short walk. It's like a 2 mile. Stupid.
Fun times traveling with kids.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Favorite breakfast food of your kids?
My kids'
favorite breakfast?
Yeah, to make your kids. That's right.
They like waffles with chocolate chip.
Ooh. My daughter is right up there with you.
All right.
Except my baby. He likes scrambled eggs. My youngest likes scrambled eggs with lox, but you know.
Weird. Okay.
Is that mine?
My youngest, she's all about spice, like Mike's Hot Honey and what kinds of crazy, flavorful, weird foods. My 4-year-old, all he eats is eggs. That's it. Eggs and cereal.
I can't get my older two to eat eggs. My youngest only likes eggs.
So, yeah.
In the busy life of Dr. Daria, I'm maybe incorrectly assuming that you don't have much time for TV shows and movies, but if you do, what's your favorite doctor-based TV show?
Oh, to do the doctor one?
Yeah, like Grey's Anatomy, ER, you know, come on.
Grey's Anatomy and ER I watched before I was a doctor.
Okay.
They were the kind that made me think yeah, and then I'm going to be on a plane and somebody's going to call for a doctor and I'm going to come out with my cape. And now you watch those and I think actually Scrubs is probably more reality.
Yes.
Love that show.
We had a completely different mindset going into this. I watched ER and I wanted to be George Clooney.
Right. And now it's now I can't watch it. Yeah. No, we don't treat patients that way. We don't do that.
Unfortunately, Nick, though, you're 5'6" and balding. So, I mean,
exactly.
There's no George Clooney.
But I like the beard. He's got that going.
He makes it up for, I'm kidding. Yeah. He's not balding. Take the hat off. Oh, show everyone.
I am okay. Balding.
Well, yeah, but that's both of us. It was purposeful choice.
It's really bad. I was shooting content. I know this sounds super vain, but I was shooting content. And I looked down and there's a big bald spot and I'm like, I can't take it anymore. So I got the clippers out.
Dr. Daria, you got any hair growth remedies for Nick?
Dr. Daria, special hair growth remedy.com. Yeah, no,
that's
I don't.
Part three. Okay. Yeah. Time machine, hair growth, part three. Exactly. Yeah. Are you married? Is that handsome gentleman in the background your husband?
That guy, that's not a stock photo.
Okay. How was he after the birth of the first child? That's a question I always like to ask dads. What was your reaction? How are you feeling? Can you relate to us how he acted from the perspective of mom and wife?
Yeah, he's really good with the babies. He's very helpful. I mean, he's also a physician, so I guess we spent a lot of years where we didn't get any sleep in training. So he's really helpful with that. And the other thing is, from training, he's able to, the man can fall asleep standing. One time we came home from residency and he was driving home again. He'd been awake for, 45 hours taking care of patients. He drove and he pulled into his garage and awoke and his horn was going off. This is before we had kids. And the reason his horn was going off is because he had fallen asleep and his head was pushing on the horn. So this is my husband. So it actually became really useful because at night, sometimes if I couldn't fall back asleep, he'd take the baby because he knew he could, if needed to give it a bottle or do something, put the baby back in his crib, he'd be out cold again. So he's actually, I've been super, super fortunate because I have somebody who is helpful in those sleep deprived nights with the baby. So I'm really lucky.
Is it true in ER talk, you never say it's dead or slow?
You never say it's quiet.
Quiet. Okay.
Quiet. Don't say that's slow. You don't say slow either. Like, you don't say that.
Okay.
Somebody all right. comes in. Yeah.
Don't. Did you see? There was passion right there, Nick. You don't. There was. Okay.
Mood changed. I just thought of my ER doctor come out.
I just thought of a quick prank show. Let's go to every ER we can, run in, say, it's so quiet, and then leave. Just, and then, but hidden camera how show. Long Nick? Some,
except we can tackle you with shots of like Haldol. Oh, or something, or
that would just make the show that much better.
There we go.
I'm
in, let's do it. I had a question. I just lost it because I was thinking. Right, well,
I'm going to jump in.
Go, so I've please.
Got a question. This is kind of. I've got a question about vaccines. What are your thoughts on vaccines? Because I'm like, I used to be anti-vax, and then I talked to my pediatrician, and I'm leaning more towards some of them yes, some of them no, and. And with having little ones, they're still going through the vaccine process. So I'm kind of like, you know, what's safe? What's not safe? Do we need to do everything that we did back when I was a kid?
Right. I think those are great questions. I mean, the reality is all of us want to do right by our kids and keep our kids safest. Like, so I always think that whether somebody is pro, anti, whatever, like we're all anti our child being healthy. Wait, no, we're all pro our child being healthy.
I'm like, whoa.
He was like, Nick was like,
that escalated quickly.
And there's our clip.
Thanks, guys. We are all pro children being healthy. So to do that, here's what I say. And the reality is COVID was a bad time for a lot of things. I think in many ways, it was a really bad time for vaccines. I think, you know, in the way things were communicated, people were so scared and communication was not always done the very best way. I mean, part of the reason why I got in the media in the first place is because I felt that in healthcare and how the health was being conveyed, we weren't doing a good job conveying it to parents and to people in general. So to me, to my children, my kids, we follow all the vaccine schedule. We follow the full schedule. That's, you know, that's their diphtheria. That's you know, pertussis, that, you know, that is the meningitis vaccine. And yeah, do we give a lot more vaccines than we used to? Yes. But has that changed the paradigms of how we care for children? Yes, as well. So just as an example, when I started training and doing medicine in residency, it was in, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010, every baby under 3 months that came in with a fever, 100.4 or higher, we did a spinal tap on them. Because not because every baby had meningitis, but because the risk of meningitis in a baby under 3 months with a fever was high enough, we couldn't miss it. And often in babies, the only thing that would be the only sign of meningitis was a fever. So I did spinal taps all the time because babies under 3 months get fevers a lot. Then the Hib vaccine was introduced, and don't quote me on it. I think it was 2007, 2008, 2009. And in the 7 years after the Hib vaccine was introduced, Hib meningitis was one of the top causes of infant meningitis. The incidence of meningitis in infants due to Hib fell by 99.92%. So much that now we don't spinal tap all those babies. If they're 21 days or younger, we still do. But 21 days to 60, it kind of depends on how the child looks. And above that, we're not doing it anymore. That's literally like one example of how a vaccine cut the rate of meningitis in infants, which life-threatening to get meningitis. It cut the rate so much, it totally changed how we practice. And that's a vaccine that we've in the last 15 years. So do I think we should always keep looking at everything we're giving to kids? Yes, absolutely. But yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important. I think it's absolutely important that we be doing these things to protect our children. I think messages like that don't get out to parents. But like I just told you that story, and it's like, oh, wow, I had no idea. I think Dr. Paul Offit is somebody, he is a pediatric infectious disease specialist. He's on one of the FDA groups that looks at all the vaccines. He has a new book out. I think I'm looking at it over my bookshelf. I think it's called Tell Me When It's Over. And it was about going through COVID and keeping kids safe. He's a person I would any parent who has questions about vaccines, I would recommend you read Dr. Paul Offit's book. I know him personally. He's the one when I'm like, tell me, like when there was this measles outbreak, I was like, what do I need to do? My baby's young. You know, what do I do about this measles outbreak? Do I need to do something? He's the one I asked personally. And he's great guidance. So I'd say, Nick, check out Paul Offit's book too.
Okay.
I think he can, he's so educated and so wonderful.
What is
weird question? I said it. I'm always
asking. No, and it's a hot topic question. Yeah. So I'm glad, you know, thanks for letting me chat about it.
Yeah, yeah.
What is one thing, if you could put your finger on it, Dr. Daria, that us as parents, us normal folks, Americans, need to be most concerned about in the world today as far as medicine and health?
Oh, goodness. Let's dial that back. Let's say, so the reason I like to talk about kids' safety, accidents, safety, injury prevention is because from age 4 months to 4 years, accidents and SIDS in the younger grades too, but younger ages, but accidents and SIDS are the number one leading cause of death. From age 1 to 4, it's accidents. I have a graphic that I can that I made for my course, but it's literally like cause of death. And it's like accidents. And then the next thing, and then the next thing, and the next thing. And actually, I think the number, you know, 2 to 4 times more children, essentially 4 times more children die of accidents and SIDS every year than die from pediatric cancer, flu, and meningitis combined.
So accidents can be pretty broad. Is there a certain type of accident that needs to be looked at or being aware of more than anything else?
Yep. So it depends on the age, but under the age of one, the number one most the number one cause of death by far is suffocation in bed, strangulation in bed. That causes about 82% of the accidental deaths in infants under one. So it's car accidents and drowning. And specifically in kids under one, it's 93% of the drownings happen in the bathtub. So when I'm talking to a parent that you're looking at that first year under one, most of that is kind of, I call it your pre-mobile stage. I like to triage. I'm an ER doctor. We triage. And I think let's not let parents worry about everything. Let's help you triage and know what you got to worry about now. So under one, it's pre-mobile. So you're thinking safe sleep, car seat use, not just buying the right car seat, but using it the right way every time. And then bathtub safety. If you look at if you did nothing else in your baby's first year, just those three things would cut 93% of the risk of infant death in the first year.
Is co-sleeping a part of that? Deaths mostly. Yeah.
So co-sleeping, and by co-sleeping, they now call it bed sharing, where you, and just so for somebody else, somebody who having your baby sleep on the bed with you, which is different, which is like laying them all night long. That is different from mom nursing the baby, laying down, nursing the baby, it happens. And maybe you fall asleep for a millisecond. As soon as you try your best not to fall asleep. I have a couple of tips that I give, you know, set an alarm, take away your pillow, A, so baby's safer, and B, so you're a little more uncomfortable, you're less likely to fall asleep, leave a light on, a number of different things. Laying in bed to nurse with your baby and then put them back in their crib or their bassinet, that is not bed sharing, versus saying like, I'm going to sleep all night long with my baby in the bed with me, which is bed sharing. And the AAP absolutely advises against that.
Well, we made it through okay. I fought that battle. Yes. I did not win, for the record. And my 11-year-old daughter still won't sleep in her own bedroom.
Oh, no. Well, see, there's that. Yes. But yeah, I always say, if you want have baby sleep in your room, it's okay. And the AAP recommends that. But put them in a bassinet. So, I had a bassinet that was right next to me. I was like literally nose to nose with my baby. But I couldn't roll over on them.
Yeah. We had like the ones that they made that you put in your bed. So it was it was like a half bassinet, yay tall.
Yeah.
But you could still roll over on it, which was,
the AAP recommends against those now. So you were right. And have babies survived doing it? Yes. Does that mean we should still do it when we know that a lot don't? No, exactly.
Correct.
You're exactly right.
Oh, man. So you hear that, mama?
So. Uh-oh.
Professional.
Why do I feel as my like back. I am being
okay.
used to give you advice?
I got one real quick.
I could take her out of the car seat now, though, right? She is 11.
She's 11?
Okay. It's.
But she can't ride up front.
No, she's got 6-7 more months. She's counting down.
She's 13. She's technically supposed to be 13.
Oh, in Oregon, they say 12, but I'll take it to 13. I'm fine.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, sorry. My kids all hate me. My mom, even my own kids, they're like, can we get out of these car seats? None of our kids wear these. I was like, I'm sorry. You were born to a mother who is an ER doctor. You chose the wrong mom. You got to stay in them. Sorry.
You're rear facing until they're 18. Okay. That's
yeah. What's wrong with that? Got a problem?
Sorry, Nick, go ahead.
All right. Nick, go ahead. My 4-year-old loves playing hide and seek, right? So last year he decided to go outside and hide. Didn't tell mom or anybody that he was hiding. He went and hid in the car. So obviously, like, you know, 5-10 minutes goes by. Every cop in Southern Oregon is looking for the kid. I'm at the gym. I rush home. I'm running around. He happens to pop his little head up out of the car. And there he is. And then, you know, obviously lots of tears, lots of like, oh my gosh. How do you explain to a 4-year-old or three, he was 3 at the time, like the parents, to get him to understand that hiding in a car, 1, you could die because it could get too hot. 2, don't ever play hide and seek unless you tell somebody to play hide and seek.
Yeah.
He did thank us for having all the cops come and play too, though. So that was cool.
Yeah. So you bring a really great point. One of the things I talk about car safety is there's car safety when you're driving and then car safety when the kid's actually not in the car. And when they're in that mobile stage, there's 2 things I think of. So when we've heard of kids who got stuck in the car, because at age, they can often, if the door's partly open, they can get in, but they're not strong enough to actually open it fully. So yeah. One tip for parents, if you have a kid who could get into the car space is, A, always make sure the doors are closed. Never leave them open. No doors, no windows open. And if your kid is just kind of like that adventurous, you know your kid. Like if they're the kind that would be trying to crawl into the car, lock the car. You know, most parents don't have to, but some are just like, you know, that's my kid. They're going to find the single one dangerous thing and do it. So it's that. And I also always just, this is not at all what you asked about, but it just bears repeating. When you get in the car to go drive, just like always check that rear view behind you. It's easier now. A lot of cars have cameras, but you know, we always hear stories. There was like some toy and the kid was playing behind the car and the parent didn't realize. So separate out of the car danger. The other thing is going back to your other question, Nick, is to, you know, as soon as your child, I kind of told my kids, like as soon as they're old enough to understand hide and seek, it's like, you have to tell us, here's the boundaries for where we play, you know, so they're not going into place like a refrigerator or a car or some place that actually could be dangerous. So we kind of have to make boundaries for our hide and seek areas too.
Okay.
But
yeah, it was a crazy
it's parenting. Thing. This is parenting. Yeah. There are sometimes things will happen and you guys intervened before anything bad happened too.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. We're getting close to the end. I don't want to end this on a downer. So hopefully, and no pressure, Dr. Daria, but it's up to you to turn this into not a downer. And
Great. Oh, thanks. And, I mean, you bring on an ER doctor.
Yeah, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask some questions regarding what I'm about to, since we have you on. And Nick, forgive me, my friend, but we've talked about your conditions over and over and over throughout the years on this podcast. And it's because I love you and I care about you. Maybe she has something we haven't heard. So with that being said, Nick, let's give Dr. Daria a quick rundown on what you've been going through for the past 4 almost years, 2 years, 2.5. Most results on recent scans, and maybe she has something we haven't heard before.
So we were in Vegas about 3 years ago. I had what a doctor said was a stroke. And kind of went through all that. They found a hole in my spine. So I have a CF leak in my spine that has not been fixed yet. So I have like no fluid protecting my brain. I have excruciating back pain, massive headaches. There's days where I go 2-3 days, I can't get out of bed. That's why we haven't been able to do the podcast as
frequently.
Frequently. I have memory loss. I've mood fluctuations where I'll be totally fine. Then all of a sudden I'm just like super grumpy and snappy and I don't know why. Really bad depression. So The last brain scan I had was kind of normal, but I'm fainting now. Like I'm passing out, falling. So that I'm getting a heart monitor put on Wednesday to make sure there's enough blood going in the right directions and all that kind of stuff. I've gone to a couple different specialists, but Oregon doesn't, like where I'm at, we don't have doctors that understand weird stuff. So like we've done every blood test known that they could possibly think of. MRIs, brain scans, spinal taps. I probably had 20 different spinal taps just to check my fluids and stuff and make sure that the fluid, either it's building up, it's or not building up. It's basically staying the same over the last 3 years. There's no fluid. It's just slowly leaking into my body. So I did, the last time I went, I asked, is there a possibility that the CF fluid could be causing like illness? Like, could it be making me sick? Could it be, you know, that kind of stuff?
And I'm sorry, so, we don't have a chart to present to you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Again, no. And sorry, what did they say when you asked them?
They have no idea. So they're like, I haven't heard of that. I'm like, when my appendix ruptured, my appendix had a slow leak for 6 months and I ended up basically turning gray and almost dying and got rushed to the ER and they had to go in and pull my appendix out and I was fine. Obviously I'm alive still. but I'm kind of feeling almost the same symptoms as that. And some days where it's just like, man, I'm so tired. I have no energy. And I went from like, you know, I was working out twice a day, hitting the gym, chasing kids, running around. And there's days where like my kids touch me and it feels like I'm being electrocuted. Like it hurts so bad. Like I can't have them touch me. And so.
Man, I'm so sorry.
Lots.
And the CS. Yeah, there is. So a couple things. And then obviously we're not going to solve it here, but
yeah,
I have to point you in the right resources. The CSF leak, did that happen after a procedure or was it you just had a spontaneous?
No, this is really stupid. I was training to fight a UFC fighter for a promo thing for the podcast. And I was actually doing jiu-jitsu and I got my neck torn really bad. And they're pretty sure that's where the CF leak happened. So they think they pinpointed it, but I've gone to send everything down to Stanford. So Stanford does not want to do anything until we can find the exact spot it's in, but they want to fix everything else that's wrong with me. So like I've already had a neck surgery. They put a 2-inch plate in my neck because my neck was at the point where.
Don't know where the leak is.
They don't know where it's at. No, they think they know, but they're not positive.
Man. Yeah. And so I would say when somebody has some things like that, I'm glad you're getting the heart workup. Making sure you're talking about the fatigue and all, I would say, you know, okay, let's have you wear a monitor for, you know, 28-day monitor. You can, you know, that's something we see very often. Somebody might have palpitations. They might be having an arrhythmia. Sometimes people can tell. Sometimes they feel palpitations. Sometimes they just suddenly feel extremely winded and out of breath. If you're wearing a monitor, you kind of press the button. It records what your heart rate is doing at that moment. Because then for me as a physician, I can say, okay, when you were out of breath, what was your heart doing? And it'll either be like, oh my goodness, your heart was beating at 210 for this moment in a rhythm that doesn't actually get blood flow to your brain. Okay, now I know why you're feeling like crap. Or like, no, your heart actually looked fine. It wasn't an arrhythmia. It wasn't your heart. But, you know, echocardiogram, make sure that you have the heart is pumping the right way, you know, and that it's pumping enough, like making sure you're getting that. And then I say, when you get all that, then you do need to go to a place like a Stanford, like a Cleveland Clinic, a Mayo Clinic, where they have the experts who are all going to kind of, you know, get that $1 million care where you get experts who all kind of sit in a room and look from their own perspective. You have the brain neurosurgeon doc, you have the cardiologist, you have the different people, and they're trying to figure out what's going on.
Right.
So you want to go to a center like that. You need to go to one of the top centers. I know Cleveland Clinic. I know a lot of the Harvard Hospital, I think the Brigham and Women's Hospital, and Massachusetts General Hospital, all do virtual second opinions. Okay. And you can get your records, show them your test results, and they'll say, you know, this is something we can help you with. You know, fly here, get more tests, do things like that. And that's where you are now. You need to be going to one of those top centers. And where they can put their heads together.
Yeah, we've tried to get a referral up to OHSU up in Portland, and they're they're so like booked out, they can't get me in. So,
Try Cleveland. Go ahead.
Yeah, Stanford, what they've looked at it and stuff, but it's basically all that doctor does is CF leaks, and he wants nothing to do with it till they fix everything else, and then he'll dive into the CF leak. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I would go to check out the Cleveland Clinic, like a virtual telemedicine help, or at Massachusetts General Hospital, or Brigham and Women's. They all have pretty good virtual resources. Mayo Clinic might as well. I'm sure they do.
All right.
Because you need that. When you have that kind of complex problem.
My wife works for the state. Yeah, we have awesome insurance. My wife works for the state, and so she's...
Yeah.
Like that's not the issue, but it's just
hopefully that'll help.
It's been a rough couple years for my man right there.
It's really frustrating. You know,
and we thought we had answers.
The last 3 weeks
Yeah. You gotta get a place where they'll talk to each other, and I hope that helps. Try one of those places.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, I figured a way to make this cheerful at the end and make me look good at the same time, Nick. You ready? Because I haven't had the opportunity yet. So, Dr. Daria, guess what?
What, JP?
I have not had a cigarette in 3 months.
Shut up! Now that, hello, I mean, get out the, whatever you're drinking.
I quit. I quit, and I haven't had one since. So, and you know what the best part is? Honestly, when I heard my daughter telling some random stranger who was smoking when we were walking out of a Walmart, she's like, "My dad quit. You should stop." Like, oh no! Thank you, baby. Let's go.
My eyes tear up. I mean, she's watching you. Good job, Dad.
Exactly. So that was. Mm-hmm. Anywho, there you go.
I am so proud of you.
Thank you. Now, if we can just figure out this guy down here, because man, it's Sorry, Nick, dude. We go.
Sure, complex. It sounds really complex.
It is.
I had a crazy health issue 4 years ago. My heart, it was jumping up to 270, and I was going into cardiac arrest. They had to shock me on the side of the highway a couple times after coming out of an ER shift. All that to say, Nick, I went to the Cleveland Clinic, got the answers, had like a 9-hour heart surgery, and now I'm through it. Okay. But you're going through that dark moment right now. So like you're in the dark time, and like when you're in that, like you just think it's never going to be light again. Like you're like, I'm never going to have myself back again. You will. We just need to get you like to the right people.
Cool. Awesome.
I thought she was going to say you can't drink Red Bull. I was like, oh no. Turns out it was a lot more complicated than that. All right, you guys. Nick, do you have anything else?
No. This was awesome.
Don't be mad at me. I had to ask her. Good. I know. He knows. Usually I throw him under the bus and make fun of him, but that was not one of those times. I was like, I have you on here. I got to ask.
Yeah.
She is Dr. Daria. And last question, where can we catch you? Because you said you do TV shows. Where can we see you in the real big world of Hollywood and TV?
The best place is just connect with me on Instagram. I'm at Dr. Daria. I'm on all the socials, but that's the place where I'm most active. And we post the other stuff that I do there. So you can go from there and find the other things. And of course, nopanicparenting.com for the course. And that's for new parents, grandparents, anybody who has a baby 4 and younger. The aim, keep them healthy, keep you sane.
There she is. She is Dr. Daria. That is Nick Martin. I am JP. To everyone watching and listening worldwide, wherever you may be and however you may be watching and listening, thank you so very much. We love you. Make sure to catch us on all of our socials as well. And like up, subscribe, do all the things, and we'll catch you on the very next episode of Dadcast. Thank you very much, Dr. Daria. You're amazing.
Thank you. As are you.